Hello, heroes, and welcome to Session Zero, a podcast exploring role-playing through psychological perspective. I'm Porter Green.
And I'm Steve Discont.
And today we'll be discussing bleed.
So today's show, and I guess this month's shows, are going to be a little different. We're trying something new. We're really curious to hear what y'all think about this. And we are actually having a special guest today to talk with us about the concept of bleed. Now, you're probably wondering what bleed is, and we'll get on that in a little bit. But first, I would like to introduce you all to our guest, Emily Kerr-Boss. Emily, hi there.
Hi. Thanks so much for having me on.
Absolutely. Welcome to Session Zero. Now, there's probably some folks out there who do not know who you are. So why don't you give us an introduction about who you are and I guess what your deal is?
Sure. So I'm Emily Kerr-Boss. I'm a land conservationist and forester by day. And the rest of my time, I do game design and play role-playing games, tabletop, LARP, et cetera, et cetera. And I've been doing role-playing game design since 2005, when I put out my first game, Breaking the Ice. And a couple of years back, I put that together with two other romance-themed games for the Romance Trilogy. And I think those are my most well-known games.
Cool. What led you to want to make games focused around romance?
I really, really, really fell in love with role-playing in college. We were talking a little bit early before the recording started about how wacky college games can get. And there was a lot of elements in that gaming that I loved, like being somebody for years and years that grew and changed in the campaigns that we were able to do when we, you know, we could just skip class. We didn't have to actually go to a job. And there were some characters that fell in love that I played. And so that seemed like a natural part of role-playing to me. It wasn't weird. It wasn't strange. These were really close friends, and there was just a lot of room in some of the games to have those things develop. So later on, when I started being part of various communities that talked about how you designed and what was going on, one of which was the Forge forums, IndieRPGs.com, which is a closed forum now, but it was active for many years in the early 2000s and was influenced by earlier communities of design and thought. And that what prompted me to start thinking, oh, maybe I could actually make a game. And so the first game that I designed was Breaking the Ice. And I really came to it not from the romance angle, but from the idea of having a game that was kind of small, that I could, like, you know, just sort of do something very defined as the first one. And there were arguments about whether people could play characters that were different from them. And this, you know, particular argument on some forum or other was about whether a person could play a person of a different gender. And there were strong feelings that that was impossible. And I had strong feelings that that was possible. So designing a game about that seemed like a good way to go. And then romance sort of came out of that because I wanted it to be small and something where if you have just two players playing, then you don't have a lot of audience and you can really feel more comfortable and safe maybe doing something that's a little bit out of your comfort zone. And so I thought, oh, well, what would two people do? Hey, they might go on dates. Let's have it be romance. And there we go. That's how it came in.
Love it.
Yeah, that's awesome. Romance games and exploring relationships about how they come to be are one of the things that I'm really fascinated with. I think they're really interesting and can be very amazing sort of models for exploring how people connect with each other.
Definitely. Especially considering how when you're playing out those games, you get an opportunity to, in a sense, explore those scripts that we have about building relationships, or in the case of maybe something like Breaking the Ice, exploring those scripts that maybe societally we have about what it means to be on a date and to be in that building stages of a relationship.
I love any opportunity to turn tropes on their head. It makes me so happy to queer things and to play cross-gender and to mess around with what people say you should or should not do in those relationships. So it's really cool to hear that that was sort of one of the things that you were looking to do when you made the game.
Yeah, it's been fun to get to play that with many people over the years and have that experience with them. I always feel very grateful being able to play games that have a little more intimate content in them with friends and strangers.
Now, when you've had people play Breaking the Ice or the other romance games, Have there been any situations where someone or some people experienced that they developed emotional connections with the people they played with after having played the imaginary relationships in the games?
I'm nodding my head here. Yes, indeed. There's one particular couple who I dedicate the romance trilogy to who were friends, good friends, and then played Breaking the Ice, and then sort of that became part of the negotiation of their relationship changing into something romantic. So, and they told me about it, and are just a wonderful, wonderful pair of folks, and I got to go to their wedding, actually, and dance at their wedding, which was just incredibly amazing and moving.
Well, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
That's so cute. I wish that I could record Steve's anime smile face right now.
Shush. So, you know, that ties into the nature of what we're looking to talk about today, though. And that's why I want to turn this back to you, Emily, because it sounds like what they experience is a little bit of what you've come to coin as the term bleed.
Yeah, I guess that's part of the reason why that term came into my discussion of gaming at a particular time. And it has been relevant to all of the games, particularly Breaking the Ice. And the third one in the Romance Trilogy is Under My Skin. And that one is the messy one where people are acting out, LARPing relationships that might go beyond their bounds. And that one ends up, strangely enough, being the real hookup game where I've seen a lot of relationships start.
Intense emotions breed relationships.
Yeah. And, you know, in a lot of different ways, friendships and romantic relationships. So I, in 2007, was invited to go to a conference in Finland. Wonderful, awesome, raucous, wild, lovely time called Ropakon. And the theme was romance that year. So they said, oh, well, we always have a guest. We have guests. Let's have one of them be Emily. She seems nice and talks about romance. And so I went over and had to do like talks, and this was very new to me. So I was like, what will I talk about? Okay, let's talk about romance in games. Obviously, that's why they wanted me to come here. So I made some slides and, you know, had people there and we talked about stuff. And one of the things that I said was, based on my own experience, actually, from playing a LARP, I hadn't played very many LARPs at that time, but I had gotten to it. And my character had a little bit of backstory written in that they were attracted to another character. And from playing that, I got that hit, that frisson of, wow, that person's pretty cool. And it just made me think about how embodying play brought in your whole self in a way that sitting down at a table and narrating or summarizing did, but not quite in the same depth. So for me, that was the line that brought up the idea of bleed. And so I talked about just that. And it's very, it seemed very related to the acting concept of character bleed now in retrospect. But at the time, I wasn't really thinking about that.
So what is bleed?
So to define bleed, I think one could say that it's the moment where a fictional experience that one is having through role play, at least in this context, creates emotional experiences in the player that are real, physiological, mental, emotional, everything that you would say in response to these fictional events. So I understand that you folks have a wonderful podcast about emotions in role play that's going to drop very soon. So I can't wait to listen to that.
And it probably will have dropped before any of y'all are going to hear this. So go back and listen to it.
Rewind and go check that out, footnote. And so I think that's one of the things that's interesting to me, too, is to look at, you know, there's all kinds of emotions that you have when playing or doing anything, particularly around narratives. But there's a sort of a special experience you have where you're creating or you're adopting this simulacrum of a person and you're being it. And then you're having experiences that, and then, oh, but you've got a body and you've got a heart and mind, and it's interpreting these events that aren't real, quote unquote, but you have to experience them in some way. So how much one has that emotional experience about these fictional events varies, obviously. And so when we talk about bleed, at least in the context of role-playing, I think we're usually talking about when the fictional events prompt something in a player that maybe is about this fictional experience rather than what you're experiencing in your daily life.
For sure. And then where would you say the line is between having emotions, which is kind of one of the goals of gaming, right? Because we're creating a story together and living an experience that's real and or true, but not real, and then bleed. So how do you think those two things differ? Just like, for example, if you have a really beautiful story and a moment where you feel a strong emotion because of the narrative, how is that different?
I think the difference that I see is that you're adopting this other viewpoint. And it evokes an emotional response that might be surprising to you. Because if you look at the situation as a separate objective observer, like watching a movie or reading a book, you would see it from your point of view. Mm-hmm. And then there are moments that we would characterize as bleed, or one type of bleed, where you're letting your own filter fall away and you're adopting this other viewpoint. And it's always mixed. I wouldn't say that you ever, you know, totally become a different person, but it's a little magical sometimes, or a little scary when that happens, and it feels different than like watching a movie. You know, you identify, you project yourself into that, you feel emotions about what's going to happen, you're suspenseful. I mark out, as they say, all the time at the television, and I say, don't go in there. my husband's like, it's okay, they're going to be all right, or maybe, you know, whatever, but I'm just like responding. But it is different from when you feel like it's you that shouldn't go in there.
For sure.
So it sounds kind of like that when you're distinguishing the difference between, say, bleed and just experiencing emotions, it sounds like there is a distance that's being established, or kind of a barrier between the character experience and the experience you're having in the context of the role play versus, and maybe the emotions you have about it versus the integrating of the emotional experience, either that your character is having into your own personal psychological and emotional experience. Versus, say, looking at the dungeon crawl you're doing and going, oh, that was fun. I was happy that I experienced that. As opposed to, I am very angry at my GM because of the NPC that they played.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Where it carries over. And I think we made a note to talk about this at some point, but the people talk about bleed in and bleed out and directions mm-hmm. of that flow, whether it's the player's experience flowing into the character or vice versa.
Sure. So what, you know, that idea, so it sounds like there is a directional pathway that can happen for bleed. You just mentioned the idea, like bleed in, bleed out. Can you let us know a little bit about the differences between the two?
Sure. So bleed in, when people talk about that, they generally mean when, and I'll quote here, when the emotions, thoughts, relationships, dynamics, and physical states of the player affect the character. So you're looking at the player as the entity with the character as an experience within them, and the player's needs and desires and wants or biases are changing what the character might do. And, you know, characters are just fictional, right? They don't exist. So it's a weird kind of mind game that we play with ourselves, right? With narrative, that's a whole kind of interesting thing.
Well, you know, we almost mm-hmm. argue, we kind of argue here that even though they don't exist, they also do.
For sure. I mean, there are entire schools of psychology that talk about parts of self being located in the body. You're being distinctive, and you can have conversations and experiences between parts of self. And those are, again, things that are true but not real in that they're constructed. So they mean things, they do things, they have experiences, but they don't. Like, they can't walk up to this table and sit down next to you and have a conversation. It's more of a theater of the mind thing.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's true. And then our identities are constructed in ways too, internally and externally.
Mm-hmm. It gets really hard to talk about because there's so many layers. And we're looking at both sort of the observer self, right? The part of ourself that is watching us have experiences, that watches the movie and is separate from it. And then we're talking about the self that's experiencing, that's playing out the story and having the emotions.
Exactly. And then just to finish the note for folks, for terminology wise, bleed out would just be the inverse. It's when what we talked about before, I think, really, you know, having your character fall in love and then having that, you know, spill over into your experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've definitely experienced like the bleed out experience, especially when I look back on some of my LARP experiences I've had. I think one of the examples I've brought up before on the show is when I was playing in the Changing the Lost LARP with Fifth Star Productions, there was a player whose character was consistently and almost always antagonistic to my character, Vatek. And I, as a player, started to develop frustrations and annoyance at that player. And there were active steps that I, Steve, had to take to remember, no, she's a human being. She is not her character. You are not annoyed at her. You are annoyed at her character. Maybe you need to take proactive steps to get to know her.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't just assume that she is her character, Annabelle.
For sure. I've definitely experienced that too in the context of decision making. Like, I've had people who's made decisions that were so like morally unpleasant to me that I was taken aback that this person that I thought I knew well, even in the context of role-playing a character, would like choose on the side of, I don't know, slavery or try and enact rape or like just very scary things that I found abhorrent. And then it made it hard for me to trust and be close to the player then in the future, following up after that game.
And that sounds like it would feed into, I guess, what, I don't know if you came up with the idea or it was Sarah Lynn Bowman, at the idea of the bleed feedback loop. So this idea that the bleed that you experience, either bleed in or bleed out, can cycle in and out. So in this example, you would be in a situation where the character's actions bleeds out, your response to it bleeds out into you, Porter the player, and then your emotional experiences and your thoughts about that are going to then bleed back into how you interact with that character, and you're going to experience a cycling process of interpretation, re-experiencing things from that new framework, new emotional reactions to it, either in character or out of character, and keep cycling through that as things, in a sense, spiral down.
Mm-hmm. That actually really talks, like, goes right into like psychological learning phenomenon, right? Because when we have a thought or we have an experience, our brain tends to take that opinion as a fact.
Right.
Because when we treat it as a fact, we can use it to make predictions and make decisions about behavior. So we take this fact, this player is dangerous, for example, to use my example, or this player doesn't like me, to use Steve's example. And then we behave based on that opinion. So we might withdraw, we might be more confrontational or more defensive at the table or in real life. And then the person might respond to us based on those behaviors. So they might become more critical, they might become more withdrawn, they might act out in more violent ways. And then we are sort of reaffirmed that our original thought was in fact a fact and not an opinion.
Right. And that feedback loop is creating it. That's a great concept. I think that must be Sarah. It was not me, but I think that's really that concept of how you create this dynamic between people or between yourself. Seems like it would cement the experience more so that the bleed, whatever it is, becomes more firmly attached.
So with bleed, we've kind of covered that there could be potential causes, especially either with how we're interacting with people. And a lot of it seems like it might just be based on what you encounter in role play. But I'm wondering what the actual causes of bleed could be. Like, I think it'd be easy to say that it could just be the standard psychosocial emotional stuff, the things that we encounter that elicit a psychological response from us or an emotional one, or things that elicit expectations of our social interactions. I think that make the most sense at its basis. What do you think?
Well, I mean, I think that's definitely true in that we're having experiences in a narrative world, right? So things are happening, things that we might have feelings about that might make us uncomfortable, make us excited, make us scared, because that's kind of part of the point of the fun. But I think too, especially for you two, can comment on this as LARPers, when we use our body to do stuff and we act stuff, then we also start to feel the stuff, right? Because if you think about like our episode on emotion, we talked about how emotions come to be. And one of the ways they come to be is from the things that our body is doing. Like, for example, if you breathe really fast through a straw, you can cause a panic attack because you mimic a panic attack. If you have a really high heart rate from like running up the stairs and you're also worrying about something, you feel more anxious than if you don't have a high heart rate and you're worrying about something. Those are the ones that I immediately think of as anxiety, because those are the physiological responses we all know so well from horror movies and stuff. But if you're feeling, you know, kind and loving and warm towards someone because, like, for example, you're dating them or you're their very close friend, then you might make character choices that are more kind and loving and warm towards their character, whatever those two characters are like. Sure. And like a pre-established sense of trust and safety.
And I think through my own experiences, I don't know if you're the type Emily, to be able to make yourself cry at a LARP?
I definitely cried at LARPs.
Did you make yourself cry at a LARP, or was it a did it come about on its own?
I don't know how to make myself cry, but I certainly know how to get to crying, if that
makes
sense. That's
fair. But I think that there's some of that, like, they, you know, in that same context, like, we know there's tricks that we can do to our own body or in the way we carry ourselves to get ourselves to that point, whether it's adjusting how we breathe, how we hold our breath, maybe whether we don't let ourselves blink a certain amount to bother our eyes. I know that there are strategies I've used where I wanted to get at least a little teary-eyed or a little, mm-hmm. like, initially weepy, where then suddenly, oops, I'm sobbing. What happened?
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, because when we think about emotions and the way they come to be, they come sort of top-down. Like, I have a thought, and then I feel something about that thought. Or they can come kind of bottom-up. Like, I feel something in my body, and I interpret that thing as an emotion and give thoughts to it.
I also think I'm a very weepy person. I respond
Me too.
Very strongly, right, to commercials or stories or, you know, like, and then in character, it's just this amped up a whole nother level because I am having a 3D surround experience and there's a person I'm interacting with and so invested in the story. So it crying is part of that. You know, it feels natural in that moment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I cry regularly at my tabletop game, so I'm a little afraid of what would happen if I LARPed a character that had any real emotional depth at all.
And, you know, this is kind of an aside from just the concept of bleed, but I think that's also really useful as a recognition of your own limitations and knowing your own strengths and weaknesses in a sense.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So from that psychological perspective, though, you know, that feels like it could run a risk.
Well, sure. I mean, anytime that you're experiencing strong emotions or that you're accessing emotional content, you run the risk of rubbing up against something that feels like a wound or something that is tied to strong emotions of your real life.
I have an example, too, I'd like to share from the third of my romance games, Under My Skin.
Please.
Mm-hmm.
The way you create characters in that game, and I think I may have summarized the premise of it earlier, but if not, it's a game that you can play with 4 to 8 characters. It's people in a social circle, some of whom are in relationships, some of whom are not. And during the course of play, there's sort of a set series of situations that happen. The exact plot changes every time, but people start being attracted to someone who's not their partner, their committed partner. And then you see what develops. You know, do relationships change? What are the impacts on friendships and existing relationships? Are there breakups? Do people affirm their relationship within that? And so that's the context of the game.
Mm-hmm.
When you're creating characters, one of the first things that you do for your character is you choose a core issue. And that is something that the character struggles with or that's a theme in their life that sort of colors everything. It might be anger or isolation or fear. And the way that the characters get fleshed out from that is that everybody can give you an idea about where that might manifest in a person's life. Like if it's isolation, it could be work, it could be family. And then each person takes that sort of set of concepts and then starts to create a character, just a, you know, little background of what that character might be like that is suggested by that. And then you match them up. So you pick the characters and you say, okay, well, these characters are in a committed relationship. We figure, oh, well, they have a similar background or they might have met through this way. And then later, randomly, you choose who the new relationships are. So that kind of breaks through those original things.
Mm-hmm.
But that core issue, when I was designing the game, it was funny. I had that idea, but I didn't have the order right. When I first play tested creating characters in the game, I did it in the opposite way. So you sort of figured out, oh, like, what do they do for a living and what are their interests and, you know, a variety of sort of external factors. And then you said, okay, so what's their core issue? And I was doing this with a friend. We were just like, you know, just going through the process to see if it was possible. And he looked at me and he said, I have no idea. I don't even know how I would start to figure that out. And then just flipping it and starting with a core issue, which to me seemed like, wow, that's a lot to ask of people. But if flipping it and starting it from the core issue, it just all accretes and it makes sense, like when you come from that direction. So anyway, that's a long-winded way of getting to where the positive play comes in. But because each of the characters has that sort of spine to them, or that organizing principle, they're interacting in terms of that, and people are sort of thinking about those themes and how they interplay. So it's really, really interesting seeing what people resonate with or what they bring to that. And it's written into the game that that's a place where people are invited to play close to home, which is one of those sort of jargony concepts that it's actually kind of intuitive what it means. It means you're playing something that's similar to what you feel or what you've experienced. And it's an invitation. It's optional. You don't have to. You can play any character you're interested in. But when people do bring something that's a little bit close to home, it gives them an opportunity to, in this fictional character, explore those themes. And so I've seen people pick ones that either were things that they've struggled with and they wanted to have, you know, just sort of this character that could give them a framework to play with it a little bit. I've also seen people pick elements of other people important in their lives who maybe had that quality to help them get a little insight into them. And I guess that's part of what we're doing in role playing, is we're taking on another role so we can see the world in a different way. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting to think about intentionally picking someone or some aspect of someone to help us learn.
And that sort of leads right into, I think, the next topic on our list, which was the idea of how does bleed impact your character creation, like how you make a character.
I feel like the under my skin example is long.
For sure.
That's sort of built all around it. I never really thought about it, but it's sort of built on the option of including bleed in your character or aiming towards it.
But I think like one thing that we can consider is if you recognize that, like, for example, what you brought up with that idea that someone plays close to home is a really good way that if someone wants to explore certain concepts that they're already dealing with, but from another framework or another perspective, they can do that. I think also addressing and acknowledging the potential for bleed can also inform a person while they're trying to make a character. So they might recognize what, for example, when we talked about the potential for trauma or encountering trauma, recognizing that maybe addressing certain concepts or dealing with, for example, say certain types of trauma, be it abuse or certain family issues, recognizing that that would be an issue for them and they don't want to find themselves being triggered in the process of playing a game, knowing that they can make character choices or background decisions that they could choose to avoid that or go in a completely different route, or even just recognizing in choosing particular games, kind of like how you said, Emily, like you and your husband have agreed that you will not play that game. There are games out there, for example, I think, you know, one of the most brilliant games I've seen in the last few years, Bluebeard's Bride. Mm. If someone has relational abuse, violent, you know, certain violence against women and a lot of these other issues as personal triggers, that is definitely not the game to play. And but that is a recognition that going into that, I mean, unless that is something that you're wanting to be able to explore in, I guess, the context of a safe, quote unquote, safe environment, where you are playing with other people who are being conscious and, you know, being making conscious decisions about what's happening at that table.
Yeah. It's really another it depends if you think about it, because you can play with trauma and things that have traumatized you, and by choosing to play that thing and choosing the ending, you are becoming empowered to tell that story in a unique way. But I think the important things when you're making characters that play close to you, there's a lot of pitfalls, right? And there's a lot of strengths you can get, just like any other character. And it's important, too, when playing with hard topics that you make it part of your session zero. Like, that's why I think that making a blacklist and a gray list for a session zero is really important in games, because there may be some things that people don't want to talk about. And you may feel ready to process through, like, child sexual assault or relational traumas, whereas other players at the table are totally not willing to deal with that content. So it's really important to make that part of your sort of, you know, rules of the table or rules of the LARP before you sit down to do it. And then to think about character creation as a way of empowering yourself to use, you know, the wacky giant human imagination brain, which is what causes bleed, to help you and to be fun and to be useful and to be empowering, right?
Absolutely.
It can really feed your imagination.
Mm-hmm.
It's also kind of interesting that we're getting at how we can take these things and it might go into the characters. Because that kind of gets into, and also having just mentioned Bluebeard's Bride, kind of gets into this another concept that comes up with bleed that was actually proposed by one of the creators of Bluebeard's Bride, Whitney Strix Beltran, which is this idea of ego bleed.
Mm-hmm.
So that there is the likelihood that you as an individual are going to take your personality and the contents of a player's personality is going to spill over into their character and vice versa. So just how we had bleed in and bleed out of these emotional experiences, it's the same for personality.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that there are definitely some players who just are not able to separate their own personality from the characters that they play.
Mm-hmm.
But I definitely have seen, you know, the classic example I think I've used before is where someone learns and develops to become much more sociable
mm-hmm.
through playing at the table, and then that comes back into their real life. So they're bleed out.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
They're bleeding. Right. Yeah. Just making sure that they're bleeding out. They're essentially having an ego bleed out. Well, I think of an example where one of the players in one of your games
mm-hmm.
who is playing a very charming, charismatic, mm-hmm. Maybe from my understanding, gregarious mm-hmm. elven bard.
Ironically, this particular player has a tremendous amount of social anxiety that they've coped with in their life, but they tend to play like super gregarious, talky characters or very attractive characters, and mm-hmm. they've done that in multiple games now. So it's kind of become a bit of a pattern.
But I imagine from your observations, there's definitely been some ego bleed out on that.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
Where, because in a sense, it's that idea that you get to practice those skills at the table in a way. Mm-hmm. You get to practice having that personality. And it's that scenario in, I feel like it's gestalt psychology of mm-hmm. the as if scenario where mm-hmm. you're going to pretend as if you are this charming bard, and you can take those skills and take that psychological and emotional experience back into your daily experience.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. There's actually a lot of theories about how we learn in groups. And if you think about things like scaffolding, where you're learning by bringing the person who struggles the most with the skill up to the level of the rest of the group mm-hmm. through support, gaming can really function that way. And also there's a sort of like safety in knowing that if I mess up my charisma check, my bard mm-hmm. did badly. I didn't do badly.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're struggling, yes. and you're feeling worried about it, you don't have to worry about the words that you say. You can just roll the dice. And if you roll well, you can say donkeys and it still works. You know, it makes it a lot less scary to practice.
That reminds me of another concept, at the alibi. Mm-hmm. Of the game allowing you to take on actions or roles that you wouldn't otherwise, but it's because the game requires it. So it's mm-hmm. this opening for you to do it, and then it can allow you to create that in larger ways, like you're talking about where you scaffold yourself into learning a skill. Did the Elven Bard, has that helped that person sort of be more like that, or is it more that they're just still playing with it and enjoying that?
I think both. I mean, just observing them like as a person experiencing the world at the table and in social situations, I feel like playing the character that they've played has allowed them to have a lot more comfort being sociable, and to like use the character as kind of a way of, you know, going, what would my bard do? Or like what I say is, what would Nor do? Like my character, Nor, has this famous quote, fall down confused, stand up angry. And I tend to think of it in terms of like those moments in life where you feel situationally vulnerable or hurt, and you have the choice to feel like a victim or the choice to feel like a survivor. You know what I mean? Like the reframing of vulnerability. Mm-hmm. And I use it all the time. And I think things like, what would Nor do? I mean, obviously Nor would stab them, but metaphorically speaking. And I think that this player does the same thing.
I want to touch on something you brought up, though. You said the concept of alibi, and I was just wanting to make sure that we defined that concept for our audience.
Sure.
So when you say alibi, what are you particularly referring to in the context of bleed?
Let's see. I think it's related to bleed, but it's not necessarily an element of bleed. It's a concept that was introduced. We'll have to do some research and say, you know, in the podcast notes, who did that. Alibi generally is used to talk about the way that the fictional events give you an opening or an opportunity or an invitation to do something that you wouldn't otherwise do. It's sort of related to bleed, but it might not be in the same exact category. But it is talking about the difference between who you normally are and what is needed for play.
It's kind of like where that idea of that psychological wall, that maybe the alibi is me saying, well, I'm giving myself permission that what happens here is all the character and not me. So that sounds like it could be a nice barrier itself to bleed, because if the negative emotional experience or even the positive ones that are maybe outside of the player's comfort zone happens, the acknowledgement is that this is the character's experience, not me, Steve, the player's experience.
I feel like people have some really strong feelings about that and about how much of it is which.
Mm-hmm.
Like some people, I think, strongly believe that what your character does informs who you are, where other people think of it more like acting.
I mean, it could be both.
Mm-hmm. Like I said before, I feel like all the masks we wear when we're gaming are things that are inside of us, because if not, how could we create them? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So we may be highlighting one or another of our contexts and our content and different choices that we make.
Sure. And from the framework, one could argue, like, if someone is wanting to play, say, an evil character or a character with less desirable qualities, it might not be that the player themselves is evil or manipulative or anything like that, but there might be a part that they're curious about or that they've had thoughts that relate to it, and it might give them an outlet where they, you know, as we've talked about before, an outlet where they can explore those, in a sense, a safe environment or a potentially consequence-free environment.
Mm-hmm. I always think of it as in, I have experienced X or I have seen X in my life in some way. What would it feel like to be X?
Mm.
I think that's a really useful part of gaming.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Hey, heroes. We're going to end the episode here for today. But stick around 2 weeks from now when we pick back up our conversation with Emily Karabas on Bleed. In the meantime, see you next session.
If you've been enjoying Session Zero and other podcasts on our network, and you value independent creators being able to support themselves and continue to create content for you, consider supporting our network on Patreon at patreon.com/oneshotpodcast.
Your contributions to the One Shot Network helps us to pay for the studio that we record in, the content that we use to represent our work, the hosting of the podcast on the magic internet, and all the spicy water we consume. Becoming a contributor to the One Shot Network Patreon grants you access to bonus content in the network's secret archive, such as some of our personal gaming stories, and possibly some of your favorite network characters on our pretend therapy couch.
There are also other perks, like the Gift and Book Club, the T-shirt Club, and many more. Please consider contributing today.
Looking for a new podcast to check out? Try The Broadswords. The Broadswords is an all-women D&D podcast focused on drama, roleplay, and subverting stereotypes. Join the Broads as they unravel the mysteries of Snowy Rashomon, a land ruled by witches and steeped in superstition. Berserkers reign, and spirits roam the frozen wastes. Yularis, Keela, and Mepris all have their own reasons for journeying north, but they soon find they have something in common. They are pawns in a divine plot.
Heroes, we would love to hear from you and hear your ideas for our show. You can find us on Twitter at @SessionZeroPod, or you can email us at sessionzero@oneshotpodcast.com.
The song you hear right now is Hikari by I Love Brandon, off his album Earth and Sky. If you would like to hear more of his work, visit eyelovebrandon.com or find him on Spotify, SoundCloud, Twitter, or wherever else you like to find your chill beats that listen to podcasts too.
Remember, heroes, Session Zero is for sharing information, not for therapy. If you feel like you need support, check out Psychology Today's Find a Therapist database. If you're experiencing a crisis, head into the emergency room or text CONNECT to 741-741 from anywhere in the USA. Be safe out there, and we'll see you in the next session.